It is another Political Perspectives on WFSU-FM at 88.9 FM and also for FSU Comcast Channel 4. And welcome to your Tuesday. I'm Tom Flanagan. And before we begin, a reminder, you're always invited to be a part of Perspectives via phone and email the local number 414-1234 in the greater Tallahassee Metro. It's 800-926-8809 of long distance from you to us. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address, or tweet us at WFSU Perspective. This Perspectives episode, as we mentioned, telecast at 7:30 Eastern Time. I'm on 4FSU, Comcast Channel 4 in Leon, Gadsden, Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties. And you'll also be able to see it online at our Perspectives page, which you can find at WFSU.org/elections2016. Well, Florida House District 8, just in case you haven't seen the new map, and we did have a few little adjustments here in our House of Representatives maps as a consequence of the census that was taken back in 2010, and then the legislature got in, and in a very expeditious and non-controversial fashion, they came up with new districts. Well, maybe not all districts were non-controversial, but mostly for the House of Representatives. It was a fairly straightforward affair. House District 8 takes in the northern part of Gadsden County as well as parts of northwest, west, and southwest Tallahassee. And since 2008, the district has been represented by a guy named Alan Williams. I think you're familiar with him probably. Due to term limits, Mr. Williams cannot run again for that job, though, and has decided instead to seek the job of Leon County Election Supervisor. There are four Democratic candidates who would like to succeed Mr. Williams as the representative for House District 8, and they join us today on Political Perspectives. We'll go around the table and then hear from each one of them. We have, to my immediate left, Mr. Clarence Jackson. Good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming.
Good to see you, as always.
Right next door to you, Ramon Alexander. Welcome back.
It's great to be here.
Another welcome back, Diane Williams-Cox.
Good morning.
And Brad Johnson, good to see you, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be here.
And thank you to all for coming out and talking to us here. We're going to go back around the table, and what I'd like to do without any real time constraints is to give you an opportunity to give your background and how that background would impact the job that you're looking for, which is the next representative for Florida House District 8. So if we could, Mr. Jackson, your turn.
Okay. Well, I'm an unlikely candidate. I'm an unpolished candidate. And what that means is that I don't have the normal pedigree of, you know, some of the former representatives. I'm just an old country boy from Gadsden County who loves community service and has put some time into community service and electoral politics in my hometown of Gretna and in Gadsden County. I think that's very important, especially in this race, because this is a low socioeconomic district. And a lot of times what happens is what I found through working with the legislature and working in government in Gadsden County is that a lot of our people feel underrepresented, if represented at all. And so I think it's time for people in District 8 to have somebody who understands what it's like to live from paycheck to paycheck at times, who understand what it's like not to have a job at times, to understand what it's like to go through the regular struggles of life. And a lot of time in politics, that person gets pushed to the side. But I believe that in this political season, what you're seeing is that regular people want somebody who understands their struggles to represent them. They have been voiceless for too long. And, you know, it's easy. You know, I one of the most disappointing times I've ever had in politics was when I got honored by the governor about 2 years ago. And when they brought me up and presented me, he asked me where I was from. And I said I was from Gretna. And he said, where was that? And at that time, Gretna was in the news, I mean, a major news for the whole casino and gaming. And I thought, I was disappointed by that, which means that even though we were at the forefront of the news, I mean, people could really care less about what the people of Gretna and what the people of Gadsden County were really going through and what they really needed. So I believe I'm that person for the job, and I'm working hard on the ground to make sure that I am.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Mr. Alexander, your turn. A little bit of background and how that would impact your administration of one if you get into House District 8 as the representative.
Well, thank you, Tom. I'm a fifth-generation product of House District 8. I'm a graduate of FAMU High School and a former student body president at Florida A&M University. And for the past 10 years, I've been investing my time into working with young people in our community. We're losing so many of our young people to the streets, so many generational cycles of violence, poverty, and despair. And so we've been able to lay out a vision called Distinguished Young Gentlemen that's touching the hearts and souls of families all over our community. We're serving young men in Gaston County, Leon County, and Jefferson County. My commitment and my ability is based off my capacity to identify resources. Napoleon Bonaparte once said that the three most important things you have to do in order to win a war, the first is money. The second is money, and the third is money. And it's a war zone out there. And so I believe I have the capacity and ability. I've worked in the mayor's office in Tallahassee. I've done extensive work to play a key role in getting President Obama reelected in Florida. I've also served as a North Florida political director for Governor Charlie Crist and other extensive things. But for me, I believe that I have the capacity based off my track record of building sustainable communities, coming up with visionary scopes to address issues that impact my community every single day. And it's great to be here today.
Thank you very much, sir. Diane Williams-Cox, your background, ma'am, and how that impacts your campaign.
Good morning, and thank you for that question. As I said, I've said before, when I ran for this seat in 2014, I ran the full cycle, and I was able to connect with the individuals and actually receive more than 5,000 votes in that run. So I'm back again to see if we can bring those 5,000 back to the table who believed in what we were telling them. My background is that I was born and raised in Quincy, Florida, graduated from James A. Shanks High School, class of 1981, and matriculated to Florida A&M University, where I graduated with a degree in data processing technology. As I mentioned to you this morning, my major was considered a STEM major even way back then. I became a computer programmer and also continued to be systems analyst, business analyst, and I also taught at the collegiate level at Florida A&M, teaching others. I believe that the 19 years of state employment and the other years of working in the private and international sectors give me the sweet mix that is needed to connect with our community. I've worked for 30-plus years in our community, standing in the gap for those parents who could not be at the school meetings, who could not be at the school board meetings. My husband and I live here in the south side of Tallahassee. He's also from Quincy, also a graduate of Shanks High School. And we've worked together to raise our three sons, who are our sons are adults now. And so we have the time to expand and to continue to work in our community. I believe that the experience that I've acquired, the maturity, because if you look around the table, I may not look it, but I am a little bit more advanced in age than these gentlemen here.
I'm not buying it.
But that, along with proven leadership, I've worked at various levels of state government, and I know how to work and negotiate with secretaries of agencies because I've had to provide the data to do that with and explain it. And I've also worked in the Florida legislature as a business analyst and as a programmer. So I will be able to get to work day one on getting the citizens' issues brought with a voice like no other, because I'm bringing the voice of Gaston County as well as Leon County, because I've lived in both places, and I'm looking forward to working for us.
Appreciate that, ma'am. And we wrap up our introductory remarks here with Mr. Brad Johnson.
Thank you, Tom. Well, I'm honored to be here today to talk about why I would like to represent the people of the 8th District. I've had an opportunity to live and be a part of this district my entire life in every angle and county within it. I grew up here in Leon County and also in Gaston County. I'm proud of my blood and unabashed about being from both Leon, but also a little small town outside of Tallahassee called Midway, Florida, where I learned the importance of service and hard work. I grew up and went to school at Gobbie High School is where I graduated, went to Florida A&M University, got a degree in agricultural business. And I tell people all the time, they say, well, you've been working in government for the last decade. How'd you get a degree in agricultural business? And I told them, knowing the importance of hard work, when my grandfather got off of work, he wasn't a farmer by a long shot. But he did grow quite a bit in his garden. And I would get out there and I would pull greens or tomatoes or whatever grandmother would want. And every time we'd ride to town, I see those tractors on the left. And I say, whoever's selling those are making a lot of money. And I don't have to sell. I don't have to work as hard, if you will, by putting my hands in the dirt. So I wanted to go to school for ag business. But the reality is I was committed to service. Growing up, having an opportunity to go to church and on the weekends and during different times of the week, having fish fries and chicken dinner sales and things of that matter, to raise resources to be able to give to people when they came to the altar and said that they were in need. But learning how to transfer that commitment to service into government is what really allowed me for the last decade to serve people in this region, and not to just step at the table and say I want to be elected because it sounds good, but because I have been putting the work in for the last decade. I've had an opportunity to work for Gadsden County and their county commission for a year or so, a couple years actually, doing outreach and working on intergovernmental affairs and policy. I've had the opportunity to work for the United States Congress. Former Congressman Alan Boyd, and I worked in the congressional level for a number of years during the Obama administration, working from issues ranging from environmental, the Affordable Care Act, which a lot of people know about. I had an opportunity to go throughout the entire region educating people on those issues and also doing so locally for the office of the mayor here in this community. And I only mention all of that from an experience standpoint because there is a certain level of proficiency when it comes down to the issues, the zeal for the desk work that one must have. I call it a balance between care with all and wherewithal. You can't know it all, but at the same time, you have to have a passion for it. And I think I've had an opportunity to display that for the last decade. The people in this community have immense needs, and I think you've heard that from all of us. We live in a great community right now. I mean, we're a two-time All-American Award city. I had an opportunity to be a part of that as a member of the Boys Choir of Tallahassee some years ago. We have been recognized for the best parks. We've been recognized as just about every accolade you could think of in a certain part of our community. But I think the stronger we can become is when we realize the disparities we have for healthcare and education, the lack of jobs. And now one of the most towering and disparaging statistics is the level of crime and criminal activity in Leon County. And so I'm committed to that. But more importantly, I think and I'm wrapping up, Tom, we need a new brand of leadership. We have seen year in and year out, and I won't bring the national stage too much into the conversation, but you have seen a growing disdain with the typical politics as usual. You've seen a growing disdain with those that each year their signs and the colors and the faces of a campaign and their slogans will change. But the reality is we must talk about who has been there and continued to be there and do the work that it takes to move us forward. And I'm committed to it. And on Election Day, I'm asking people to vote LBJ.
That's the introductory remarks from all of our candidates here, all Democrats who are running for Florida House District 8, Ramon Alexander, Clarence Jackson, Brad Johnson, and Diane Williams Cox. If you have a question for the candidates, give us a ring at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org. A quick timeout, and we shall be right back. Florida House District 8, that's what we're talking about here on Perspectives. We have the four Democratic contenders for that position here with us on Political Perspectives, Ramon Alexander, Clarence Jackson, Brad Johnson, and Diane Williams Cox. And we also want to remind you of another upcoming program that we have on the TV side exclusively. It's called Bandwagon, and we have two of them this year because of the multitude of races and candidates that we have flying around here. August 8th will be for Leon County races, and that is on 4FSU Comcast Channel 4 at 7 o'clock, and then on August 10th, it's for the Gadsden and Wakulla County races, also on 4FSU, 7 o'clock both nights. So be there or be square. It'll be lots of fun. Let's go around the table here, and we'll change up the order, because otherwise someone always starts and the same person always ends, and that kind of gets a little bit boring after a while. Top issues that you see for District 8, which is that wonderful mix of major metropolitan area, which is that section of Tallahassee that it encompasses, but also that whole northern part of Gadsden County, which is very, very ruralized. Mr. Alexander, what do you think are the major issues facing the district, and specifically what you would do when you hit the legislature to fix them?
Absolutely, Tom. One of my main focuses is workforce development training. As I said before, I work with young people every single day. I probably average 3 to 4 phone calls a day from young people asking about different opportunities. They're stuck in a black hole, this transition process of trying to matriculate from high school or even if they drop out of high school. If you look at the high school graduation rates, when you look at the college graduation rates, I personally believe that the system is designed for our young people to fail. One of the things that I'm going to do is take my background in youth services and community development, and I want to promote a transition database where individuals that are coming out of certain communities have access to certain resources, developing a 1-800 hotline where they're able to get guidance and perspective. You know, one of the things I tell young people all the time is that you have to go out and get things. And people ask me all the time, what is the most important thing you can do for a young person or person you're working with is to teach them how to think for themselves. But they need consistent interaction. It's not just about teaching them how to think for themselves. And so as a member of the legislature, I will leverage my relationships with DJJ and identify funding in order to do that. Another thing that I'm very committed to is youth services and youth development. As I said before, it's a war zone out there, and we're losing so many of our young people to the streets. And as I said before, the system is designed for them to fail also. And so I'm going to make a commitment to establish a gold standard for youth services and mentorship resources across the state of Florida. There are great duplication of services throughout the state. They're great work. I call them mom and pop operations that are really saving lives and impacting the quality of life of people. What I want to do is I want to streamline those processes, create a concept where we have best practice models to build capacity, build sustainable communities, and get funding directly to those entities and organizations. When you look at the appropriations process, you oftentimes see larger entities that have political capital getting those funds. Well, I'm going to advocate through DJJ or through specific committees to get funding specifically for these agencies and entities so we can get the money to the heart of the community. Those are a few of the things that I'm committed to doing. I think I bring a very unique perspective and background in that regard, and I'm committed to bringing that leadership to the Florida legislature.
Thank you. Clarence Jackson, your laundry list, sir, and what you do about that?
Well, my laundry list is very, very simple. It's joblessness and a lack of economic development. I've served on the Northwest Florida League of Cities. I've served as a mayor and a commissioner in Gratna, 2 times elected. I've served on Big Ben Cares. I serve on the Crypto Board. I have a vast knowledge about what's really happening in this region, and we're in what I call a vicious cycle, and it all begins with a lack of economic development and joblessness. When you look at schools being underfunded, you can tie that directly back to joblessness and a lack of economic development. So one of the things that I will do to aid in that process, and I just go to some things we got done in Gadsden County, some things we got done in Gretna. Number one, we need shovel-ready properties. We need shovel-ready properties. We need to spend money on infrastructure. For instance, Gretna, a few years back, we annexed our city out another 10 miles to encompass the I-10 Highway 12 interchange. That was a very, very important move for us. And what we did was we ran water and sewer out there. And what we did was we said, listen, if you want to do business, you can come to our city and do business. We already have it set up for you. And We'll give you some tax concessions in order to help you do that. When you create jobs, you create economic empowerment for a lot of people. And then you talk about health care. Think about it. If people had jobs, the health care issue would begin to diminish. So joblessness and a lack of economic development is a huge issue. And I want to be a person on the forefront of making sure that happens. And we got to be innovative as well. We got to be innovative. And people who want to come here from, just say, San Antonio, Texas, and start up a business, we need to be able to offer them tax incentives to come. And the last thing is, in 2015, the enterprise zones, they dissipated. They went away in the legislature. And what that basically means is that those economically deprived areas did not receive any special concessions as it relates to governmental funding. I would fight real hard to reintroduce enterprise zones in the state legislature.
Very good, sir. Brad Johnson.
Well, I'll tell you, the issues are so vast. But I tell you, I heard someone once say that you've never seen a great community prosper that was unhealthy and uneducated. And so while I do agree with Mr. Jackson wholeheartedly, currently that there is a need for job growth in our community, we've got to begin to ask ourselves what incites corporations and businesses to want to start in our communities. They're going to look at to see what level of proficiency our children are being educated. They're going to look at the workforce and see their skills and see how educated they are, what the schools, how they're performing, and they're going to see the level of health care that we provide. Also, government has to serve all people well, and I believe that we start there. I believe that when we look at the Affordable Care Act, which I had an opportunity to be very, very close to working with that and educating people throughout North Florida with that, we have to look in our state at communities much like the 8th District and those abroad who have people of elderly age and indigent who aren't receiving the health care that they provide that they need in order to be able to be in the working class. Those are the things that matter. And so I will be fighting for jobs, fighting for job development from the standpoint of looking within government and utilizing those opportunities to figure out how we can fund and create partnerships through workforce training. One of the programs I had an opportunity to work closely with during my tenure in the U.S. House, and I had opportunity to work with the Gadsden Leadership and Law Academy. And that program is a very unique program in that it has the opportunity to give young people a trade while they're working to get their high school degree. And it was a program that was funded through the U.S. House, through the congressman, but also one that I had an opportunity to work closely with myself. And those are the type of things when we start talking about job development and increasing and that government necessarily can't do it on its own, those are opportunities where it can. Well, we can look and find ways to create educational partnerships and vocation training. But I'll tell you, when we look at Medicare in the state of in our nation, and we look at Medicaid expansion, and we talk about that from an Affordable Care Act standpoint and healthcare altogether, I think of a specific story that really bothers me in the state of Florida. And this goes back to my importance and belief in healthcare. I had an opportunity before President Obama served in Washington. I had an opportunity to be invited to a sit down. It was with the Chris administration, and it was with former Surgeon General Anna Viamonte Ross. And it was with every staff member throughout the entire state that worked for a member of Congress. And the message was clear. It was our state. We have a $70-plus billion discussion that will happen every year. How do we fund services, responsibilities? And the biggest thing was we need to address Medicaid. We need to address our Medicaid system because if we keep going year over year, we're going to have some problems with our state budget and providing the services. As you know, about a third of the budget is Medicaid. And at that time, the request was simple and clear. We need more Medicare dollars. Now, isn't that ironic? And fast forward, the teams change, and all of a sudden, there's no more need. But when you look fast forward at our Medicaid system, and we talk about Florida Kid Care, and the millions of dollars that we're going to have to scurry to find to be able to provide care to indigent children in their families in our communities, we're going to have some problems. So for me, I think that we have to look at all of our issues in the 8th District as a Rubik's Cube, that they're multi-angular approach to focusing on all these different colors and problems. And we got to figure out how to spin them all together to get them in together and on the right side. So I will be focused wholeheartedly on education, making sure that our children in the 8th District are not lacking and that our state not only invests in education but invests in the importance of it being something that's a novel idea but a responsibility.
Thank you very much. And Diane Williams-Cox, your thoughts.
Well, one of the things that I've learned in this last run and in this current run is that I can't sit and look and say this is what I think the problems are. What I did in the last run, and I continued it in this run, was to go throughout the community and talk to the citizens to find out what do you say your needs are. And that's how I developed my platform, based on input, because as I told you, my background is data processing. So I gather data and then we draw conclusions from that data. My conclusion showed that there is an issue with education. Our children are not receiving the proper education due to the lack of funding, due to the lack of options to meet their very needs for learning. And we need jobs. But jobs are not coming because of the lack of education in our area. We have low test scores. We have low school grades, which I disagree with the high-stakes testing that put low self-esteem on our children and make our schools look bad. I'm a product of the Gadsden County Public School System, a proud product, and so I know what we're capable of doing. I also learned from that going around the district talking to individuals that they need health care. They cannot learn, and they cannot work if they're not healthy. So in my opinion, there's no reason for us to not have expanded the Medicaid options for those people who need it. Emergency room care is a whole lot more expensive than preventive and wellness care. So in a sense, I talk to businesses And businesses said they would love to come to Gadsden County, but the school system is preventing them from doing so. So we've got to find ways, options. We can't be set in our old ways of how to educate. Education is evolving. Our children and our population are evolving. We've got to figure out how we can reach our children to teach them. We've got to figure out how to reach our adults to do some vocational training so that when the companies and the businesses come, when the floodgates open, we have skilled labor forces to be able to do those jobs. I am ready to hit the ground running to fight for a good, solid education for District 8. I am ready to hit the ground running and negotiate and reach across the aisle and work with others to make sure we can create jobs. We have incentives to create jobs in District 8. I am also ready to stand on the floor and take on anyone who says that we do not deserve access to affordable health care. Without the Affordable Health Care Act, I would not have insurance. I'm a small business owner. The only way I could afford insurance was to be a part of that Affordable Care Act. And I was able to keep my son on my insurance until age 26. So he now has his own insurance. That's what parents want. Parents want to be able to take care of their children. We need to create a healthy citizenry so that they can learn and we can go out and earn and make our community so much better. I am ready to take the fight. I've talked to the people. This is what they say they want. Mr. Jackson is correct. They felt underrepresented in the past. We're going to do something about that now. Now that we know that that's an issue, we're going to fix it. And that's what I've been trained to do. Collect the data, act on it. And that's what I'm ready to do.
We have the four Democratic candidates because there are no Republican candidates for District 8 here in Florida. And we are talking to all four of them here on our Political Perspectives. If you'd like to join the conversation, 414-1234, 800-926-8809 is the long-distance line, and perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. Let's do combine a couple things because we got an email, we have a caller on hold, and we have a very timely thing going on over at the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. And the what do they call that? It's not the Ever Ready building, but it's named after some battery.
The battery building.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, because it looks like the copper top battery.
See off I-10.
Yeah, but this is a re-examination of Florida's water quality standards. Mm-hmm. The EPA over the past couple of years came out with a nationwide standard. Florida begged to vary its standards, saying that we are a totally unique situation and shouldn't be bound by the same water quality standards that, say, Arizona or Massachusetts might have. And now the state is going to adopt its own group of water quality standards. So we have an email. Let's keep these in mind here. What proposal might each candidate have to restore and protect Florida's springs, of which we have several within District 8? And we also will go to the phone then and piggyback on some air quality matters with a caller named Ed. Hi, Ed. Thanks for hanging on. Welcome to Perspectives. We hope Ed is still hanging on the line.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead, Ed.
Oh, yes. I really wanted to address the situation that came up not all that long ago, and it was the biomass plant. Now, asthma is rampant in the black community. It fills up the emergency room at Tallahassee Memorial. It's especially prevalent in kids, and I would like the people on your panel, Tom, to comment on the attempt of John Marks and Andrew Gillum to place a polluting biomass plant 1 mile from overwhelmingly black Sable Palm Elementary School, which would have made the quality of the air even worse and would have made the asthma problem that is already rampant even worse.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ed. And I don't believe that plant anymore is viable as a proposal, but I think there was also a biomass plant that was in play within Gadsden County, if I am not mistaken. Mr. Jackson, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. To your point, the Baumaz proposal coming to Gretna was actually my launch into politics. I had no career drive to be in politics. I didn't need to add anything else to my resume. But when the Dodge Biomass plant was approved by the current city commission to come to the city of Gretna, a group of citizens got together and said, this cannot happen. We waged a campaign throughout Gadsden County, and we got that overturned. And what we found out during that process is that most times these biomass plants are placed in low socioeconomic minority neighborhoods. And what we said in Gretna is that that's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. And he's exactly right. There are fumes that go up in the air. It makes people sicker. People with asthma gets sicker. And so the project is long gone by now, but that's what launched my political career. And I don't consider myself a politician. I consider myself a public servant. And that's what did it. We got together and we said, this cannot happen. They were going to put this biomass plant 1 mile or so away from Gretna Elementary School. And we totally reshaped government in Gretna, totally reshaped government in Gadsden County because a group of people stood up and said no. And I actually think that that's the type of political season that we're in, where people are tired of the political elite shoving things down our throat because they don't think we know any better. They are shoving things down our throat because there's some money or quote-unquote jobs attached to it. We're smarter than that. We are better than that. And the people of Gadsden County said we are not going to stand for that. And mm-hmm. That's where I stood.
Any thoughts you have on water quality while we're in your neck of the woods here?
Of course, water levels are rising every year, contaminating springs everywhere. One of the things that we do in Gretna is we make sure that our wastewater management plant is significantly upgraded at every chance we get. And we don't just run water or wastewater off everywhere. We actually get it back down to almost a drinking level and shoot it down to a nursery down in Sawdust, Florida, so they can use that water and regenerate that water. That can help. That's one way that the spring issue can be helped.
All right, sir. We'll go around the table here and continue our discussion about that and anything else that comes up during our chat with the four contenders for Florida House District 8 here on our Political Perspectives. And you could join the conversation, too, at 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We shall be right back. Let's continue our chat about things of an environmental nature here on our Political Perspectives. And let's go over to you, Brad, and talk a little bit about that. When it comes to air quality, whether it's proposed biomass plants that no longer seem to be a thing anymore, but the ongoing pressure on Florida's water resources here as we sit right on top of that aquifer.
For sure, as far as addressing the potential biomass plants that were a discussion here in Leon County as well as in Gadsden County at one point in time, they did not happen. And I think the citizens of the community spoke well. They spoke out and they didn't want it. And I know that at that time, I think that the motives were different on both sides. But either way, it was something that probably did not need to happen. The citizens spoke out about it. I know the city of Tallahassee as a public utility was wanting to find a way to leverage and ensure that they were not growing the amount of the cost for utilities on the citizens here in Leon County and then Gadsden County. It was just a corporation that wanted to come to town, and it was promoted as job opportunities, but that's not the type of jobs people wanted. People wanted clean jobs. And so either way, I'm glad that it's not a discussion. I think it was a great question that was asked, but I'm glad it's not something that we're looking at happening in our local community. As far as water issues, I've had an opportunity to really work on water issues and environmental issues quite a bit, having spent some time, about 4 years, working on the congressional level. That areas that I did a lot of work over was in Wakulla and Franklin counties. And when we look back and we talk on issues like fracking and we look at the BP Horizon, Deepwater Horizon oil spill, I tell you, people will leverage and talk about jobs over environment. But that was an opportunity for me where I learned there was helplessness. There was despair. There was standing there with oystermen and fishermen who there was nothing to do. Their paycheck stopped instantaneously. The tourism industry stopped. BP is going to owe themselves to the coast for quite some time. And when you start talking about the discussions that are happening on this day, about water quality, I mean, you look perfect example. A result of fracking is certain water quality issues like benzene in our water supply. And those types of things are not good for water quality in our waterways and for consumption. In the 70s, the state of Florida really got it correct when they created water management districts, individuals who not only watch water quality but also watch from a construction standpoint. You can recall some years back and we had the water wars in the state of Florida and we were on the front line battling communities like Atlanta. Who will have a build it first and then figure out where the water comes from second. And water is our biggest asset and commodity in our state for tourism purposes and just for vitality. And so I will always be a big supporter of our environment. And I can tell you the issues that they're talking about today, I do not support. I think we need the most stringent water quality regulations and policies in our state to make sure that we protect our pristine values. I mean, last thing I want to say, and it's almost a joke, but the Woody Guthrie song said, "This land is your man, land is my land." We have to make decisions right now that when years to come, we're able to be responsible and respectful and give a nice world to our future generations to come. So thank you.
Okay. And Diane Williams-Cox, air, water, all that stuff.
Well, let me go to Ed's question about, our community having such an asthmatic situation, being a family member and seeing family members go through episodes of asthma, it's not a pretty sight, especially when you're dealing with children and you're dealing with the elderly. We need to make sure that we do whatever we need to do to make sure the air quality is good. One of the reasons why healthcare is so expensive is because of the chronic diseases caused by poor air quality. And we're having to take care of people for years upon years because they've been exposed. And so when you look at communities to put in harmful biochemicals because you think they don't matter or you think they won't fight back, that is not fair. This land is our land, all of our land, and we all deserve an opportunity to breathe in clean air and not be concerned about how our next breath will come. And like the little girl on television said, you know, when she has an asthma attack, it's like a fish out of water. So no one wants to feel that way where you can't take your next breath. I lost one of my very favorite teachers due to an asthma attack. She was a very good teacher in the Gadsden County school system, but we lost her due to that. So I, too, say no to biomass, but I impose upon citizens, don't wait until an issue comes before us for us to fight. We've got to be proactive. We've got to stand at those borders and say, you're not coming in here with that business. You can come in with this type of business, but not this type of business. We don't care how many jobs you provide if it's going to wipe out our community. We don't need those kinds of jobs. We need clean jobs. And as far as water quality, having grown up in Gadsden County, you know, Lake Talquin, the Apalachicola River, Chattahoochee River, we grew up calling it. Of course, we want to make sure that water stays pure. And even here in Leon County, I was so disturbed when Lake Eller dried up some years ago. Thank God for the resurgence. I think the best thing that we can do is take politics out of the environmental issues. Let the scientists do their job and advise us on how best to maintain our environment. We only have this one. And if we don't do something to extend its life, then we all go. The sea level rising in South Florida is directly due to water quality issues, global warming, and things that we have done through greed, through politics, through things of no fault of people in Gretna, people in Quincy. We didn't do it. People who we elected to represent us allowed it to happen. It stops now.
Okay, Mr. Alexander.
Well, I've been endorsed by the AFL-CIO, and that's based off of my strong stance on the environment and the need for a statewide energy policy. I understand the whole concept of working towards diversifying our fuel mix. I know specifically in Tallahassee, we operate about 88% on natural gas and about 2% on hydro. And I get the fact that natural gas is one of the cleanest ways to produce power, but it's also one of the most expensive ways. And so it's going to be very important that we recognize the full dynamics of that process, but along with that, educating people so that they are empowered to take ownership for their communities. And you cannot teach what you do not know, and you cannot lead where you do not go. And so I'm going to be committed on the standpoint of air quality. My mother has asthma. Several members, my brother has asthma, making sure that we're making the necessary investments to move forward with the statewide energy policy. Also, in regards to water quality, that goes right back to educating people. We have to learn how to break down silos and vertically integrate our interactions with our schools, with our communities, and our churches so that individuals are giving information on a consistent basis. Not propaganda that twists and turns information that creates dynamics, but brings people to the table of understanding so that we can have reasonable, well-thought-out conversations of how we take care of our communities. And as a member of the Florida Legislature, I'll be committed to that. I'm excited about that endorsement. I'm a former Boy Scout and Cub Scout, and it runs deep in regards to conservation and preservation of our communities, and I will be a strong advocate in the Florida Legislature for our environmental community.
Back to the phones we go as we continue our discussion with the four Democratic candidates for House District 8 in the Florida Legislature. Thanks for hanging on, Tim. Welcome to Perspectives. Hello, Tim.
Is this with Ken Wills?
No, but this is Tom. Does that help?
Well, I was hanging on, but my name's Ken Wills.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, Ken.
Thank you first for accepting my call, and I'd like to thank your august panel that you have. I wish we could put them all in the legislature. Office up at the Capitol. But one issue I want to discuss just briefly is about this mental health issue. I had a very unfortunate situation happen at Florida State Hospital in Chattahoochee with involving a family member, my daughter, who was 38 weeks pregnant, went into labor, and apparently there was some issues about her getting some help, which caused my grandson to be severely brain damaged, and he died after 8 months of being on life support. And so I'd like to find out how your panel will address the mental health issues here in our community, what we need to do to bring some oversight at Chattahoochee Hospital, because since my grandson's death, you had some other deaths at that hospital. And apparently, I've spoken with the governor's office, I've spoken with Alan Williams when he was in office, I've spoken with some of the legislators. I've, you know, had to go through a long legal issue involving the issues with my daughter and things that happened involving this issue. And so we really have to bring some oversight to that hospital, and we have to address those issues involving mental health, because this wasn't a case where you had somebody having a gun, but nonetheless you still had a death, and we really, really have to bring some accountability involving that issue with the mental health.
Absolutely, sir. Let's go around the table here and get some input from our panel on that. Not just Florida State Hospital, which at one time, as I recall, was a general mental health facility and then became exclusively involved with just getting folks who have mental health issues just ready enough to face a court proceeding. And so it kind of is no longer the original intent probably of the facility. But let's go around and get some input from our panel here on the overall mental health issues as well as Florida State Hospital. Let's start with you, Mr. Alexander. We'll kind of randomize things again. What do you think?
Well, thank you for that question. And mental health is a major issue in our community. And as I said before, I work with families and young people every day, and we get a lot of referrals in regards to various issues. We get them at various stages in coming up with individualized plans and referrals to ensure that they are successful. But overall, we need greater capacity and a greater interest in regarding those issues. Parents, mothers at an early age being able to identify particular signs or being overdiagnosed or being misdiagnosed and being able to know where the resources resources are to be successful. As I said before, there are a lot of duplication of services. There are folks that are doing good work out there, but they lack the capacity to sustain the work that they're doing. And so what I'm going to do as a member of the Florida Legislature is, one, I'm going to work towards breaking down silos locally in the community. I believe as a member of the legislature, you don't serve from the seat to the street, but you serve from the street to the seat. And so I'm going to take my very unique perspective, advocate for mental health funding, advocate for training, identification of resources, and really, once again, vertically integrating ourselves into our schools, into our community groups, into our youth groups, so that we can identify and address those issues and not look at it as a negative, but look at it as an opportunity to address. We did a workshop with our students about 3 weeks ago at Florida A&M University, and the workshop was called Purpose Versus Perception. And we had all of our students close their eyes, and they meditated about their life story. And each student had the opportunity to write a book about their life. And the students got up, and we had students with so many issues seeking counselors and seeking out different resources. And other young men in the room didn't realize that they were going through the same situation. Young man saw his father get shot. You talk about domestic violence and how that can lead to depression and all type of things of that nature. And so as we take a greater focus, one of the things I want to do in the legislature, and I'll wrap it up here to save time for everyone else, I'm committed to creating a single mother's conference district-wide where we're able to go in, identify resources. I know 83% of the young people I work with every single day come from single-parent homes. Mothers are working two or three jobs. And so I'm committed to bringing that grassroots type of leadership, that excitement, that commitment, and taking that cause and taking that case to the legislature to advocate for more funding that actually gets to the ground and not bottleneck up on the surface level.
Very good. Mr. Jackson, your turn.
Yeah, I believe one of the main problems as it relates to mental health is that we tend to criminalize mental health,
mm-hmm.
right? And so what happens is that people who suffer from mental health, they are least likely to get that help because they are embarrassed to say that they have a mental condition. And so what I believe we need to do, number one, is we need to let people know that mental health is a health condition. It's a health condition. It's the same as heart health, foot health, or anything else. And so as it relates to Florida State Hospital, of course, being from Gadsden County, that's one of the major, major employers. I pastored a church in Chattahoochee for 13 years. Most of the members in my church worked at that facility. And a lot of privatization has happened over the past few years. A lot of job losses happened in the past few years. And I got to tell y'all something. Chattahoochee looks like a ghost town. It looks like a ghost town compared to when I got there 16 years ago. And the last thing I want to say about that is that when you are laying people off and then you are understaffed, you start having issues like you are seeing the young man talk about on the phone. My first cousin died in an accident at Florida State Hospital about 5 years ago. He was an employee. And you know, based on just family conversation, an understaffed hospital, and he's trying to work with a unruly mental patient, and he lost his life in the process. So this issue is, you know, near and dear to my heart, and I will fight like heck to make sure, number one, that we keep Florida State Hospital viable, not just for jobs, but we get back to what you talked about earlier, making it a place where people can get the type of help they need and not just be a source for the criminal justice system to get people ready to go to court.
Okay, very good. Diane Williams-Cox.
Well, let me just say this, that mental health is an illness. I mean, it is something that we need to make sure we have care for. Again, if you have health insurance, you can seek that help. People don't have affordable health care. First, let me give my condolences to the gentleman on the phone for the loss of his grandchild and the young lady's child. Being the only one around this table who's given birth, I cannot imagine losing a child. But health care is very important to make sure that our people receive the kind of help that they need. If mama sees that something's not quite right with her son, she can take him to the doctor to get an analysis. But if there's no health insurance, she can't do that. So we need to, again, provide the funding from the Florida legislature. We can't go out there and put our hands on anybody to do anything. Our job is to legislate. And in the Florida legislature, I will be there advocating and working across the aisle to bring the funding needed to keep Florida State Hospital open and staffed properly, to make sure that we expand Medicaid options so that families can get the health care that they need. And also, if we need to send counselors out to assess or have counselors in the schools, when we were growing up, we had guidance counselors who would assess us and be able to do some things. We need to return to that so that we can make our community whole. Our community has not been whole for a long time. We have people self-medicating on drugs and alcohol, which exasperates the situation even more so, where family members can't reach folks. They're doing things that cause harm not only to themselves, to their families, and to our communities. So we need, as a Florida legislator, we need to identify and direct funding to where it needs to go to make sure that we fill in the gap and fix those things that have cost us lives.
It looks like we conclude our conversation here with you, Mr. Brad Johnson. We have about a minute to go.
Well, I'll be very swift, and I'll tell you, for the caller that called in, my condolences as well. You know, I tell you, again, I'll quote, you have never seen a great community thrive that was unhealthy and uneducated, and this is an issue where it collides. This is an issue where health collides with the miseducation and non-education. A lot of people live in the fog when it comes to mental health. Having been someone who not only has had an opportunity to work with policy, but I've also been someone who dealt with a great deal of constituent services, namely working with our military veterans who have had an opportunity to come back and deal with post-traumatic stress and actually doing what Mr. Jackson basically said, which is making them realize that it is indeed an illness, it is indeed a disorder, and it's something that must be addressed and identified so that we can then work on it. I tell you, when we talk about Chattahoochee, indeed, I was just there this past week, and that is one of the biggest issues there, which is the state of jobs in the community, and that each, I would say each year, there's looking like there's going to be more and more layoffs there. But the legislature must indeed provide funding to make sure that it is a world-class institution that's ran. The focus has been shifted over years, as you stated, Mr. Flanagan, but I think what we need to do as House members is make sure that we ensure that mental health does not create recidivism and criminal justice issues. And that's one of the biggest focuses that I have as a House member that can potentially be there to represent the people of the 8th.
Thank you, Mr. Brad Johnson, Diane Williams-Cox, Ramon Alexander, and Clarence Jackson.
Thank you, sir.
The candidates for House District 8 of the Florida Legislature. That brings us to the end of this program. Technical assistance from Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls, and video support for FSU is Suzanne Smith, Paul Dam, Brandy Staney, Jason Ransomer, Frankie Verdecia, and Kathleen Duke. I'm Tom Flanagan. Tomorrow, House District 9, right here on Political Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.